Fair warning, the following contains disturbing sexual imagery and criminality. The names and identifying information of the perpetrator of these crimes and of victims have been changed to protect all concerned. Everyone listening should proceed with a thoughtful consideration of utmost caution. These are real crimes committed by real people. Sexual criminality is the dimension beyond the comprehension of the common man. It is a dimension as near as the boy next door and as personal as your own anatomy and belief system. Sexual criminality claims the flatlands somewhere between normal sex drives and disabling mental illness. Our own understanding of sexual criminality usually falls into simple-minded moral diagnoses and breathtaking ignorance of this most personal part of who we are. This is a part of ourselves we meet only with loathing and fear, believing we understand it. We are mistaken in this understanding. This is Sex Crime Central. His name, Charles Johnson. The time, the waning moments of a last chance at life. His occupation, illustrator, artist, advertising executive, and now convicted felon and ex-con. At present, recently released from prison, the man known to his family as Grandpa Charlie now spends his days not at a senior retirement village, alternating between shuffleboard and bingo. Instead, he's attending his sex offender group, and he lives in a rundown trailer with no one to share his life with. From this moment on, following the only conviction of his entire long life, Grandpa Charlie continues his long journey into self-awareness. His only companions in Sex Crime Central, a little dog he keeps for company, and a larger wolf that he is barely able to hold at the door. This wolf's ancestry includes a long line of despair over a life poorly lived, loneliness in the last days of his time on Earth, and hopelessness about ever experiencing anything like lasting happiness. He was born shortly after the first American Depression. A gifted student and a talented artist, he spent every free moment of his boyhood surfing off the coast of a small California beach town. By his mid-20s, Charles Johnson, a slim man known to his friends as Charlie, married the woman of his dreams sometime in the 1950s. Together, they had what they believed at the time to be an idyllic first several years together. And together, they brought two beautiful daughters into the world. Then, in the seventh year of his marriage, Charlie's wife, Lucille, approached him with an important yet unlooked-for announcement. "I don't want to have sex with you anymore." Charlie, raised on what was then a standard of normalcy, believed that, well, a promise is a promise, and despite her announcement, he stayed with Lucille without even questioning the relationship. Perhaps he thought she really didn't mean it. Maybe he couldn't even imagine that she could mean it, at least not permanently. But she did mean it, and the change was permanent. And things went from really bad to even worse when Lucille decided to pick up drinking. She drank every day, and she drank a lot. Charlie's marriage had become not only sexless, but was now devoid of human companionship. His wife, even if she was there in their home, was simply not present. Her glassy eyes, staring off into oblivion, for hours on end. Early on in his situation, Charlie turned to masturbation to soothe his most elementary and his most superficial sexual needs. He went on dates with himself in his bathroom, but over time, he found the ambience to be lacking a certain something, After all, he was never going to have an affair. No, Charlie was not that kind of a guy. He was never going to go to a prostitute. That wasn't for him. He wasn't raised that way. He was married, for God's sakes. Divorce? Out of the question. Divorce was as unthinkable as the idea of talking to a friend, or even to his priest, about the problem Charlie was having. It was in the early 1960s when he decided to buy a new magazine that was just really taking off, and it was getting a lot of buzz. You might have heard of it. It was called Playboy. It proved to be just the ticket, exactly what he needed to finish off the job at hand, so to speak. After all, he had a lot of things he needed to get done. Later, in the 1960s, his subscription to Playboy magazine was starting to feel as though it had grown a bit long in the tooth. Fortunately, there was a porn breakthrough during the mid-60s in the form of yet another new magazine, Penthouse, which was more explicit, racier, and just what the doctor ordered. Sort of Playboy on a booster shot. Until eventually Penthouse, too, became a bit dated, and then it was replaced in turn by Hustler magazine. Raunchier by far, but in just the way Charlie felt that he needed. A few years after Hustler came into the world, VHS was made widely available in the United States, and Charlie lost himself in its warm embrace. Color TV, privacy, lots of beautiful people having lots of the sort of sex Charlie, now in his mid-40s, could only dream about. But boy, were they good dreams. He had a bit of a wait for the advent of DVD, true digital quality deliciousness, but Charlie didn't have to wait much longer for the widespread availability of dial-up internet, followed afterwards by broadband. Always a tech geek, Charlie was right on top of these developments. They took only a short time as measured by those with normal sex lives, but for Charlie, who waited impatiently on the next advance, the arc of technological progress was an eternity. After all, he was depending on his porn to help him honor his values, like marriage, family, and his sacred vows. Then, one day, after waiting for so long for the very good stuff he was now finding on the internet, there was a knock at the door, what those in the know call a cop knock. Charlie, or Grandpa Charlie as he was now known, opened up his door to a team of grim-looking armed men. Their leader had in his hand a warrant to search the premises, and the group strolled in without Charlie even beginning to invite them. They immediately confiscated his computers once they had confirmed they contained evidence of his having downloaded underage pornography, aka child porn. Shortly thereafter, Grandpa Charlie was taken into custody, charged with multiple felonies, which his costly attorney eventually negotiated down into fewer counts, but there were still enough for the judge to send him to prison for 6 years. Lucille never did show up for his trial. His own adult children disowned him. And before he was released from prison, Lucille died. Now, in his 70s, Grandpa Charlie wonders, what happened? Somehow, his first answer to his own question isn't really satisfying. I was just being stupid. No, that wouldn't work at all. Welcome to the debriefing. Pioneer psychotherapist Carl Jung once observed that we do not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. His thought is the heart and soul of our time together as we debrief the crimes here at Sex Crimes Central. Our growing ability to detach from our shock, our disgust, and even our horror at sexual criminality promises to help us make our own darkness conscious. Before we get too deep into this, I'd like to say a word to newcomers. You're going to have to remember that understanding a crime is not the same as excusing a crime, and this is what a thoughtful examination of sex crimes can do for our community, if we're willing to engage in it. If we understand a sex crime, then we can learn to predict a similar sex crime. And this is really what happens when we learn to understand anything. If we can learn to predict sex crimes, then we can go on to prevent sex crimes. So, we can't really say that we care about victims of sex crimes and then remain unwilling to examine how they come about. We would then be like a doctor who says he cares about victims of plague or disease, but does nothing to learn about how those diseases are spread. So let's see what we can make of Grandpa Charlie's case. If you're thinking he's a pedophile, that is, that he has deviant arousal to children, well, you're going to have to be forgiven because that's what most people believe. And most people in the criminal justice system believe that too. And it's what most episodes on TV shows will tell us. I've even been in courts where the DA, who had absolutely no clinical training whatsoever, insisted that the defendant was a pedophile. But consider this about Charlie. He had liked adult women his entire life. He had had sex with numerous adult women before his marriage, and he had sex and enjoyed having sex with his wife for 7 blissful years. For decades, he looked only at pictures of adult women, and that was all he wanted to look at for sexual gratification. Does that sound like a pedophile? No. He doesn't sound like a pedophile at all, does he? And he's not. But you're thinking, he had child porn. So how did he come to make the decision to download child pornography? The answer to that question will come in a few minutes, but let's take a look right now at the notion of sexual needs. We don't talk about sexual needs in our society much, and when we do, mostly people's brains go right to the subject of intercourse. But we actually have a vast array of other sexual needs, over 2 dozen of which are in my book, We're All Like This. Suffice it to say for now that just as every boy and girl, every man and woman has emotional needs and social needs and physical needs and spiritual needs, we also have sexual needs. There is no dimension of the human experience that doesn't come with its own set of needs, what we would call concomitant needs. Think about the typical human being's sexual needs and consider, hypothetically, someone you love and care about. Would you ever wish upon that person the sort of sex life that Charlie had? No hugs from a lover, no tender kisses, no words like I love you. None of this, none of it for decades on end. If you stop for a moment and think about it, would you ever consider such a sex life sustainable? And consider this. What would you advise a loved one in that situation, say a sibling or an adult child or an adult grandchild? Would you advise them to stay as Charlie did, telling them, well, a promise is a promise? Would you really advise them to stay with no change or even hope of change in sight? To stay for decade after decade? If you said no, definitely not, then relax. You're normal. The rest of you, please look me up and book an appointment. You need some help. Because that's not normal. That's unfeeling, and it's inhuman. Nobody wishes that kind of a life on anybody they love and care about. Weaker men, like myself, would have had an affair, gone to a prostitute, or filed for a divorce. I'm pretty sure I would have done one of these, if not all 3, altogether. But Charlie did none of this. And why not? Well, because of his own high moral standards, believe it or not. A promise is a promise, is how he put it, and he repeated that mantra over the decades, determined to tough it out and to stay in his marriage. And so, decade after decade, he masturbated to pornography, alone and miserable. Now, here's what happens to men who do this. They become increasingly lonely and miserable. Those who are good at compartmentalization, like Charlie, can go on to work, pay their taxes, perform their chores, mow their lawns, But inwardly, they're ticking time bombs. This is true because although they are like ordinary men everywhere and they too need love, including adult sexual love, such men have made a deal with the devil and have given up love and connectedness for mere titillation. Titillation? Remember, that's arousal to physical stimuli, and that's all it is. Charlie needed to have a good sex life because a good sex life is made up of titillation and another variable we call intimacy, that is, a safe sharing of our lives together. We know that Charlie needed this, really, because any normal person needs this kind of a sex life. Charlie's thinking error was in mistaking himself for the sort of man who could get by with only half of this formula. He thought he could get by with titillation alone. How does a man make such a flawed decision? Part of the answer has to be ignorance, right? We have a sex ed curriculum that teaches kids about anatomy and physiology, parts and what they do, and oh yeah, we throw in pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases, but no one teaches about normal human sexual needs. No one teaches how to have normal, healthy sexual relationships. No one taught Charlie about his sexual needs or how to manage them intelligently. Not his parents, not his school, not even the church they attended, the church that claimed to be able to teach all of us how we should live our lives. In fact, if anything, the rules he learned in church took on a far more important presence and significance than Charlie himself. The list of thou shalt nots became more important than the man the rules were meant to serve. So Charlie would never have had an affair or gotten a divorce. He never would have gone to a prostitute. There was no workable adult solution that was non-criminal for him because of the way he'd been educated, because of the way his church had taught him. He kept his own solution entirely private to himself, and his sex life, such as it was, stayed private for decades. But, and now we're ready to answer the question we started with, how do we get to a place where Charlie was? Well, there's this thing about understanding human beings. Human beings who are repeatedly exposed to the same stimuli over and over. Whether it's a song on the radio, or the view out a window, or a picture of an alluring, beautiful woman, in all of these instances, repeated exposure results in the phenomenon of systematic desensitization. Or as we say in the psychotherapy biz, sys descends. Repeated exposure to a stimulus always results in a reduced reaction to that stimulus over time. For Charlie, the practical outcome of all this talk about systematic desensitization was that his go-to porn, beautiful women pose erotically, well, they eventually became no more than wallpaper for all the good that it did him. Remember, this is a man for whom titillation is the only game in town. There is no intimacy. There is no love. There is no meaningful connection with another. There's nothing else. All he's got is titillation. So what could Charlie have done differently to prevent himself from having such an ignoble end to his life? How could he have prevented this crime from even happening, much less sending him to prison? Well, in therapy, once Charlie learned that he'd let himself be played by his wife, by her alcoholism and his own foolish choices, once he realized that he could have and should have tried to confront his wife, and then set a time limit on the amount of time he was going to give her to change, then he could have filed for divorce and moved on had it not been for his own codependency. In the words of University of Texas professor David Buss, we are the descendants of those who knew when to cut their losses. Charlie lived on, and he continued. He made something of his therapeutic experience. He eventually started flirting with other women. He asked other women to go out on dates. He picked up his life and he went on, 50 years after his marriage blew up. Can we at least agree none of us listening to this right now ever want to make Charlie's mistake? can we at least agree that we're going to learn from his painful experience? What can our community do to prevent sex crimes like this from taking place? Well, there are things we could do. We could actually begin to provide our young people with a sex education that includes human sexual relationships, not just a lecture ending with, "So now you know it's not all about sex." We could teach our children how to really understand human sexual needs and how to manage them honorably by their own moral standards and legally by the standards of our communities. Right now, no one in America is getting this sort of sex education. No one is using the word sustainable to talk about sexual lifestyles. We need to change that. We need to talk to each other about sustainability, and we need to keep talking about it. Lovers with lovers, parents with children, friends with friends. We all need to be questioning and talking and thinking about this. We could learn from people like Charlie. Grandpa Charlie's slideshow. Case closed. People journey from origins we only seem to understand in hindsight before they make their final connections at the station we know as Sex Crime Central. One such visitor, Charles Johnson, age 85, a citizen unremarkable for his conformity to community norms, boringly normal in his sexual history, not a man given to criminal thinking. Charlie worked his entire life, paid his taxes faithfully, and raised his children to be productive members of the community. What he didn't do was take care of his own business, and instead, he allowed himself to groom himself into an all too comfortable familiarity with child pornography. Instead of the normal life he'd always assumed would be his, Charlie's journey led him to an extended stay in Sex Crime Central.
You're listening to Sex Crime Central with psychotherapist Stephen Ng. This has been an Ng Intellectual production with editing by Steve Cooper and original score by Octophonics. Follow Stephen on Twitter at StephenNgMFT or visit StephenNg.com for more information. Don't forget to subscribe to Sex Crime Central and leave us a review with your thoughts on each episode. We'd love to hear from you.